Good morning and welcome to Allegheny Baptist Church. We're doing this service online, as you know, due to the coronavirus. We have been in a series of How God Speaks, but we are leaving that series for one Sunday to share some thoughts about Mother's Day today. And so we're going to go into Luke and go into Luke 1, verses 26 through 38, a very familiar portion that I'm sure everybody has heard. Now, in the sixth month, the angel Gabriel was sent from God to a city in Galilee called Nazareth to a virgin engaged to a man whose name was Joseph of the descendants of David, and the virgin's name was Mary. And coming in, he said to her, "Greetings, favored one, the Lord is with you." But she was very perplexed at this statement and kept pondering what kind of salutation this was. The angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God. And behold, you will conceive in your womb and bear a son, and you shall call him Jesus. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High, and the Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and his kingdom will have no end." Mary said to the angel, "How can this be, since I am a virgin?" And the angel answered and said to her, "The Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you, and for that reason the Holy Child shall be called the Son of God. And behold, even your relative Elizabeth has also conceived a son in her old age, and she who is called barren is now in her sixth month, for nothing will be impossible with God." And Mary said, "Behold, the bondslave of the Lord, may it be done to me according to your word." And the angel departed from her. So I thought, being Mother's Day, we'd look at the life of Mary, who is probably the most famous mother of all time. And as we read these various passages, because we're going to look at a few more, keep in mind that the first few must have had Mary as their source. Nobody else could have supplied the rich and the personal details in these accounts. So in this first portion, the angel tells Mary she will have a son who will be great and called the Son of the Most High. We've all heard this account, but I want to focus on the answer here. If I could summarize the answer, it would be this: "I am the servant of the Lord, and I will do it." We have a number of reluctant servants or reluctant prophets in our Bible. Some asked for signs. Some tried to quit. Although God still worked out his purposes through these men, Moses asked God to send somebody else. Jonah ran away. Elijah came to believe he was the only servant of God left and was ready to die. Mary could have certainly doubted. She could have asked that an older or wiser woman be chosen for this job. She could have asked for time to think about it. Like Moses, she could have asked God to send another instead. Or she could have been like some of the reluctant prophets. In contrast, Mary, when confronted with a very fantastic offer, simply said, "I will do it." If we go in Luke chapter 2, verses 33 to 35, we read, "His father and mother were amazed at the things which were being said about him. Simeon blessed them and said to Mary, his mother, 'Behold, this child is appointed for the fall and rise of many in Israel, and for a sign to be opposed. And a sword will pierce even your own soul to the end, that thoughts from many hearts may be revealed.'" This, of course, is when they were presenting the child at the temple. And Mary is being told here her life, which is going to be bound up in the life of this child, is going to be difficult. Not the wonderful life as the mother of a king. Early on, Jesus is named as Messiah, but he's also named as a sign to be opposed, as it is to this day. As for Mary, a sword would pierce her own soul. And so we see that riches and a kingdom or a palace, the easy life, were not promised to Mary. Like many servants of God, the road of service can often be stony. Trouble, opposition, and grief were predicted right at the beginning of his life. However, she had a job to do in raising Jesus, and so she set out to do it. Now, if we go in this same chapter to verses 41 through 50, we see his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of Passover. And when he had become 12, they went up according to the customs of the feast. And as they were returning, after spending the full number of days, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, but his parents were unaware of it, but supposed him to be in the caravan, and went a day's journey, and they began looking for him among their relatives and acquaintances. When they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem looking for him. Then after 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the teachers, both listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. And when they saw him, they were astonished. And his mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us this way? Behold, your father and I have been anxiously looking for you." And he said to them, "Why is it that you were looking for me? Did you not know that I had to be in my father's house?" But they did not understand the statement which he had made to them. In this portion, we can see that Mary begins to understand the things that are going to take her a lifetime to fully grasp. This child is no ordinary child, just as the man he grew into was no ordinary man. What average 12-year-old could sit with the teachers in the temple listening and asking questions? What 12-year-old anywhere could astonish those who had studied for years with his depth of knowledge and his answers? Just as he stayed behind in Jerusalem to be about his father's business, which caused her worry and grief, even so he would leave her side in time to come for that same task. His mission and ministry was to do the will of his father. And that was of primary importance. We move now to Mark chapter 3, verse 21. And in this particular portion, it says, "When his own people heard of this, they went out to take custody of him, for they were saying, 'He has lost his senses.'" The kinsmen of Jesus come to take him, take charge of him, maybe take him home, for they fear he has lost his senses. We're not told if Mary was in the group, as it could have been his brothers, who did not believe. The issue seems to be a combination of the crowds pressing to see him to such a degree he could not even have something to eat, and the various miraculous signs and healings. He wasn't a tremendous geographical distance from home, and apparently the news of this had made its way back to Nazareth and probably had not lost anything in the telling and retelling. His relatives had trouble understanding all of this. I want to go now to John chapter 19. And we're at the end of his ministry now. And I'm reading verses 26 and 27. We are at Gethsemane now at the cross. And when Jesus then saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, "Woman, behold your son." And then he said to the disciple, "Behold your mother." And from that hour, the disciple took her into his own household. Jesus was near the end of his earthly ministry, the end of his life, but there was unfinished business. The one who was asked to bring him into the world was also there as he left. His mother Mary was there by the cross, and because he was departing to go to the Father, someone would be needed to take care of her. That being so, he asked his good friend to take care of his mother. Now, certainly, this is a brief sketch of a faithful mother, but it contains a good many universal truths. When asked to have the child Jesus, Mary said, "Yes." Having children is a simple phrase, but like many things that can be quickly said, it's a complex issue and process of many parts. And suppose we asked the potential mother in more detail about this subject. So we say, "Well, we want you to throw up like clockwork each and every morning for about 3 months. You will steadily gain weight. Your back and feet are going to hurt from the weight gain. Your clothing will no longer fit. And you may hate what you see when you look in the mirror. Your hormones will go crazy. You'll cry for any reason or no reason at all. And toward the end, you will lose sight of your feet and need help to put on shoes and socks. At the very end will be the labor and delivery, which is another story in itself. Even so, because all of this is common knowledge, when the question is asked, the potential mother replies, 'Yes, I will do it.' The same as Mary replied. But after the birth, the labor is really only started, for there is a period of years when mother is everything. Most of the work in raising the child will fall on them. Work starts with feeding and changing. It grows along with the child. Children must be taught literally everything from walking and talking to reason and ethics. They must learn how to deal with others, from sharing a toy all the way to being in a relationship. From the point of birth, mothers will feed the child, dress the child, carry the child, train the child, watch over the child, and answer roughly 3 million questions about everything under the sun. Now, perhaps when the child is 12, as we saw in the account for Jesus, or earlier, or perhaps later in life, there comes a time with all children when mother realizes the child no longer clings to her skirts but is becoming an independent person, a distinct person. It will start fairly early with that common phrase, "I do it myself," and will progress from there. There will come a point in time when the child will no longer accept and believe anything and everything that mother might say. Children may then reject some or all of the teachings and expectations of their mother in the process of learning to be their own person. They do not always cling to biblical precepts that they have been taught as they decide what sort of person they want to become. This is the source of grief and worry to mothers who look ahead and see troubles and the future for the children. And worry and concern for children is an open-ended process, and it's not finished when the child is 18 or 21 or beyond. Jesus was about 30 when starting to teach and was far from being a child. But we saw in the portion in Mark that the relatives didn't understand the crowds, which were frantically crowding Jesus to get close to him. They didn't understand the signs. Their thought was to take him home where he could be safe. It's odd because my mother always worried about me when I was hunting alone in the woods, and she continued, even as I was a grown man. Toward the end of her life, she lost the ability to walk. She was in a nursing home. And that fall, she asked me when hunting season started. She was near the end of her life then. The reason was so she could start worrying or praying for me out in the woods. I was nearly 60 years old at the time. Not many mothers have to watch their children die, but some do. The grief and anguish they go through in the process cannot be measured, nor can we measure Mary's grief as she watched her child die, being crucified by the Romans. What then can we say about mothers in general? When Mary was asked to bear Jesus, she said yes. She was willing to do it. And in common with her and like her, mothers say yes to many things. Will you have a child? Yes. Will you accept the worry and the work, the trouble, the heartache that comes with raising a child? Yes. Will you watch over the child? Train the child in the way it should go? Pray for the child? Nurture and worry about the child, not only in the days of childhood, but all the rest of your life? Yes. I'm very thankful that I had a mother, and of course a father too, that took me to church and introduced me to the gospel and helped me go the way I should go. This is crucial in our lives. And so we've set apart this day in the calendar to pay tribute to the mothers. And it's fitting we should do so. For had our mothers not said yes to the work and the burden of having children, then we would not be here today. Thank you very much.